Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're really diving deep today into something super practical, especially if any of you out there are thinking about focusing on real estate law.
Oh yeah, this is a good one.
We're going to break down liquidated damages in real estate contracts. And to do that, we're going to take a close look at a landmark case from the Florida Supreme Court, Hutchison v. Tompkins.
Yeah, Hutchison, that's a big one. It's from 1972, but it really changed the game in Florida, like when it comes to how courts look at these clauses that let a seller keep a buyer's deposit if a deal falls through.
Right. And we've got a bunch of great resources to help us make sense of all this. We've got our trusty podcast guidance, of course. Then we've got this really cool perplexity analysis case brief. It like really gets into the weeds, which I love, you know. And then we've got a standard brief of the Hutchison v. Tompkins case itself. So I think we're ready to jump right in.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so first things first, what are the basic facts of Hutchison v. Tompkins?
All right, so we've got the Hutchisons. They agreed to sell their land to the Tompkinses for $125,000.
Okay.
And as part of the agreement, the Tompkinses put down a $10,000 deposit.
A decent chunk of change.
Yeah, and the contract had a clause in it that said, you know, if the Tompkinses didn't actually go through with the purchase, the Hutchisons could keep that $10,000 as liquidated damages.
Interesting. So what happened next? Did the Tompkinses back out of the deal?
They did. They didn't end up closing the deal. So naturally, the Hutchisons wanted to keep that $10,000 based on, you know, what they agreed to in the contract.
Seems pretty straightforward so far. So what was the problem?
Well, this is where things get a little tricky. The trial court actually sided with the Tompkinses. They decided that the liquidated damages clause was actually an unenforceable penalty.
Penalty. How did they figure that?
Their reasoning was basically that the Hutchisons' actual damages could be determined after the fact. Like, you could just look at the original contract price of $125,000 and compare it to what the land was actually worth when the Tompkinses backed out, right?
Yeah, I guess it makes sense.
So to them, that $10,000 deposit looked more like a punishment for the Tompkinses than, you know, a genuine pre-estimate of what the Hutchisons might lose because of the deal falling through.
And then what?
Well, then the case went up to the appellate court, and they agreed with the trial court.
Huh. So two courts against the Hutchisons. Case closed, right?
Not quite. It went all the way up to the Florida Supreme Court, and they actually reversed the lower court's decisions.
Whoa. Okay. So a big twist. But what was it about this case that made it go all the way to the Supreme Court? Like, what was the big legal question they were trying to figure out?
Yeah. The real crux of the matter was, when is a liquidated damages clause in a contract actually enforceable, and when is it considered a penalty that the courts won't uphold? It's a question that comes up all the time, and Hutchison v. Tompkins really helped to clarify things in Florida.
So how did the Supreme Court approach this this big question?
Well, they went back to an important legal test from a previous case, Hyman v. Cohen, and this test focuses on a really crucial point in time.
Okay, what's that?
It's all about the moment when the contract is signed. That initial moment of agreement. The Hyman v. Cohen test basically asks, were the potential damages uncertain or hard to predict at that moment? Like, when the party signed the contract, did they genuinely not know how much they might lose if the deal went south? If the answer is yes, the liquidated damages clause is more likely to hold up in court.
Okay, so that makes sense. It's about the information they had or didn't have when they first made the deal.
Yeah.
So how did this apply to the Hutchison situation?
The court's reasoning was that the real estate market, especially in Florida, is pretty unpredictable. You know, things change, prices go up and down, and it's not always easy to predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's true, for sure. So they were saying that the Hutchisons couldn't have known for certain what their losses would be.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. When they signed that contract, they couldn't predict what it would cost them to find a new buyer if the deal fell apart. They couldn't predict if property values would drop in the meantime, and they couldn't predict how long it would take to find a new buyer, you know, or if they would even be able to sell it for the same price. All of those unknowns existed when they first made the deal with the Tompkinses.
Gotcha. So the Supreme Court basically said that the $10,000 deposit was a fair estimate of the potential damages, given all those uncertainties at the time.
Right. It wasn't about punishing the Tompkinses. It was about trying to account for the very real risks the Hutchisons were taking on when they agreed to sell their land.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. But let's say the Hutchisons did end up selling the land for even more money after the Tompkinses backed out. Would they still be able to keep the $10,000?
Well, that's where the idea of equity comes in. Even though the focus is on the moment of contract signing, the courts can still step in if enforcing a liquidated damages clause would be really unfair, like unconscionable at the time of the breach.
Okay, so like in your example, if they sold the land for a much higher price, the court might say, hey, it's not fair for you to keep the deposit on top of that extra profit.
Exactly. The court has the power to step in and prevent outcomes that just don't sit right, even if the original clause seemed reasonable when the contract was signed.
Okay, so this whole idea of shifting the focus to the time of contracting, that was a pretty big change in Florida law, wasn't it? Like, what was the thinking before Hutchison?
Before Hutchison, the courts in Florida often looked at the actual damages that could be determined at the time of the breach. So it was more of a hindsight approach, you know, looking back and saying, okay, how much did you actually lose? But Hutchison v. Tompkins really changed that.
Yeah, it's a pretty big shift in perspective.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that this has some important implications for lawyers, especially those who work on contracts. What are some of the things they need to keep in mind because of Hutchison?
Well, the biggest thing is that lawyers have to be very careful about how they draft liquidated damages clauses. It's not enough to just say, hey, this deposit is non-refundable. They have to actually explain why the potential damages were uncertain or difficult to predict when the party signed the contract.
So they need to build in that justification right from the start.
Exactly. They need to like show their work, you know, explain the factors that made it hard to predict what would happen if the deal fell through.
Right. So they need to like point to things like the volatility of the market or maybe some unique feature of the property that makes it harder to value.
Exactly. It's all about laying the groundwork for enforceability from the very beginning.
Okay. That's a good tip for any aspiring lawyers out there. Now, there was one other thing the court talked about in Hutchison that I thought was interesting. The concept of nominal damages. Can you explain that one?
Yeah, nominal damages. Basically, the court said that even if the Hutchisons couldn't prove they lost a specific amount of money, they were still entitled to something because a valid contract had been broken.
So, like, even if they didn't lose any actual money because they were able to sell the property for more later, the court would still acknowledge that the Tompkinses breached the contract.
Exactly. It's about upholding the idea that contracts matter and that breaching a contract is wrong, even if it doesn't result in huge financial losses.
And what do nominal damages usually look like? Is it like a symbolic amount?
Yeah, typically it's a very small amount, like a dollar or something like that.
Okay, so it's not about making the injured party whole financially, but it's more about making a statement that a legal right has been violated.
Right. It's a way for the court to say, look, a contract was broken here and that's not okay, even if the actual financial harm is small.
Okay, that's a good distinction to make. So I guess the takeaway for our listeners, especially those who are in law school, is that they should always consider asking for nominal damages in breach of contract cases.
Definitely. It's a good strategy to have in your back pocket, especially when it's hard to prove specific financial losses.
So to wrap things up, what are the top three things that law students should take away from Hutchison v. Tompkins?
Okay, number one, timing is everything. The enforceability of a liquidated damages clause depends on the uncertainty of damages at the time the contract was signed, not later.
Yeah.
Number two, draft with uncertainty in mind. When you're writing these clauses, you have to explain why it was hard to predict what would happen if the deal fell through.
Makes sense.
And number three, even though the focus is on the moment of contracting, the courts can still intervene if enforcing the clause would be really unfair later on.
Gotcha. Those are good things to keep in mind for anyone who wants to work on contract law. So we've talked a lot about real estate, but these ideas about liquidated damages, they apply to other types of contracts too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Whenever you have a situation where it's hard to predict the damages in advance, a liquidated damages clause might be a good option. But you always have to go back to Hutchison and remember to focus on the uncertainty at the time of contracting.
Right. And document that uncertainty clearly in the contract itself. Okay. Well, this has been a really great discussion. I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about.
I hope so. It's a fascinating area of the law.
It really is. And I think the ethical considerations around liquidated damages, you know, trying to balance the interests of all the parties involved fairly, that's something that that's worth thinking about as well. So I'll leave our listeners with that final thought. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
Thanks for having me.
See you next time.